We are recording.
All right, thank you. Good evening, welcome. I'm Sean Brennan, president of the Delaware State Board of Education. I call a May 15th regular meeting in order. It is 5:02 p.m. This meeting is open to the public. We are at Phyllis Wheatley Elementary in the Woodbridge School District in Bridgeville, Delaware, and electronically via Zoom. State Board of Education published the public meeting notice and meeting information on May 8th on the state public meeting calendar site. Thank you for your patience if we run into any technology issues as we simultaneously conduct this meeting in person and electronically. Today's agenda contains two opportunities for public comment. There is time allotted for regulations and then general public comment near the end of the meeting. Sign-up sheets are available on the table by the door. If you did not previously sign up to provide public comment via email and are logged in through the meeting URL, please type your name, organization, and comment topic in the chat box now. If you have joined through the call-in option and wish to make verbal public comment, please log in online through the meeting URL. As required by statute, this meeting is being recorded, and a recording will be available to the public on our website within 7 business days of this meeting. When voting on items for action, I will ask all those in favor say aye, and we only do a roll call vote if there is a dissent. Also, as a reminder, when speaking or making a motion, please state your name. Ms. Smith, can you please do a roll call of Delaware State Board of Education members?
Yes, sir. Good evening. Mr. Brittingham.
Present.
Dr. Griffin.
Present.
Dr. LaTavia. Present. Reverend Powell.
Present.
Mr. Sawney. Mr. Simmons.
Present.
Ms. Stevens.
Present.
Dr. Szabo.
Present.
Sir, you have quorum.
Thank you. Deputy Attorney General Alex Corbin and State Board Member Staff Kathleen Smith are also participating in today's meeting. Approval of the agenda. The board's agenda was posted on May 8th and amended on May 9th to reorder items. Ms. Smith, are there any further changes to the agenda?
There are not.
Is there a motion to approve the agenda for today's meeting as presented?
Simmons, so moved.
Simmons made a motion. I need a second, please.
LaTavia, second.
LaTavia, second. Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Thank you. Approval of the April 10th regular meeting minutes. The April 10th regular meeting minutes were provided to the board in review for review in advance of this meeting. If there are no additions or deletions, is there a motion to approve the April 10th regular meeting minutes as presented?
So moved. Stevens.
Stevens has made a motion. I need a second, please.
Simmons, second.
Simmons has made a second. Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? I will be abstaining. Motion carries. Next up, presentations. Woodbridge School District, this is for information. We want to thank you for allowing us to have our state board meeting here tonight. It's truly an honor to be down here. And we're looking forward to hearing some great things out of your district. I'd like to invite Superintendent Dr. Kevin Long, Phyllis Wheatley Elementary Principal Mr. Zach Hoover, and Mr. Dane Sears, Principal of the Woodbridge Early Childhood Education Center, to provide us information, please.
I appreciate that. Thank you, and welcome. This is the first time we're able to host here at Woodbridge, first time ever. A lot of that has to do with the same scheduling on the third Thursday of every month that we have our board meeting, with the exception of May, so we're happy to present to you. I want to go over a couple things as far as just outlining our district. Is there a way to put this, scroll down at least one? So you can see here, we're 4 campuses, 2,600 students about. We have Woodbridge Early Childhood Center up in Greenwood. It's really daycare through grade 2. That building was built in 1931. We have Phyllis Wheatley Elementary School, grades 3 through 5, which we're in right now. The newer part's about 21 years old. The part facing Church Street, it was built in 1921, a very extremely old section there. Woodbridge Middle School is grades 6 through 8, and that building is 1931 when it was built. And then Woodbridge High School is our newest building. It's going into its 11th year. It was erected in 2012. So those are our campuses. We also are the fiscal financial officer of SCOPE. SCOPE is the alternative program, SCOPE North and SCOPE South. For Sussex County. So that's our program in general. If you can scroll down, this past year, we went through kind of a rebranding. As you can see, we have a new fresh logo as well. Our mission statement to provide exceptional education in a safe and innovative environment where students have the opportunities
to succeed and contribute to society. Our new vision statement was to equip students with our core values for success today and tomorrow. And then we met this summer, presented to our Board of Education our core values. You can see their respect, achievement, integrity, diversity, excellence, relationships, and service, which the acronym spells out RAIDERS. So if you scroll down, you can see student demographics that are listed here. Again, about 2,600 students, 20% spec ed, MLL population, pretty high, over 500 MLL students in the Woodbridge School District, very diverse melting pot community. On the next slide, just want to highlight some achievements and highlights that we have been experiencing. Both ECEC with Mr. Sears and Phyllis Wheatley with Mr. Huber were honored with recognition awards for their outstanding service to students in special populations. Our middle school currently has a teacher retention rate of about 98%, which is phenomenal. Overall, this entire year, we've been fully staffed, which says a lot. And fully staffed, it's hard to do over the last couple of years. We contribute to our staff. Our staff is our best recruiters. They're the ones that promote the culture and climate that we build here. Phyllis Wheatley, Mr. Huber was recently a guest of the governor at the State of the State because of Phyllis Wheatley's test scores since the pandemic was raised 14%. And for the first time at our high school, 103 out of 136 graduating seniors have committed to a post-secondary plan. So what that means is that's going to be college, military, the workforce, or a trade. And out of that, we hover around 48 to 50% of our students go to college. So we have a large number that do not. So we really push our CTE areas and we push our workforce development and military. So we're proud of that. It was up from 56 the previous year. So that's a number that we're really looking at this year to continue to grow. And then finally, Dr. Dawn Leiberger was recently named Delaware's Assistant Principal of the Year, and she's from Phyllis Wheatley as well. She's the Assistant Principal of Mr. Hubert. So a little bit of background about our district, but we wanted to focus and highlight our Reading Raiders program. So when you look at grades first through fifth, we really wanted to identify students that were lagging behind as far as literacy, and we created a program as a pilot, and I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Sears and Mr. Huber to kind of explain the program, share some details, share some results, and highlight some best practices. So I'll turn it over to them.
Good evening.
Evening.
So the Reading Raiders program, as we titled it here in the Woodbridge School District, consisted of a first through sixth graders. The obviously first and second graders are in my building, and then third through fifth graders are in Mr. Huber's building at Phyllis Wheatley. We try to kind of mirror the nights of the week and all of that we did. So the basic rundown on the Reading Raiders program is we decided we would meet three nights a week for consistency for our students. So it was Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, 2 hours per session. We had it for 10 weeks in the spring. We were very intentional in selecting participants with a goal of building fluency among our fence sitters. So we kind of took those kiddos that were on the cusp of reading fluency, and we're looking to provide them additional instruction to kind of get them over the hump and make them fluent readers in the building. Students were invited based on their reading data and attendance data as well, because we knew we were committing the staff to be there. We wanted to make sure we were affording the opportunity to students that were attending school every day, but were still struggling. And then the other big piece of it is we provided snacks and meals to the students immediately after school. So they had dinner, they were fed so that they could concentrate and learn, and they had fun while they were doing it as well. So the data that we have from my building at Woodbridge ECEC, there was a total of 25 sessions. A couple of sessions were canceled due to snow. The attendance rate we had was 89% attendance. And we had 25 first graders and 27 second graders that participated in the program, so that we could allocate them in small groups of about 5 to 7 students. Some might have only had 4 if they were really intense things that they were working on. And the data that you'll see here for first grade, the average words per minute for the beginning of the program, the students were reading 14 words a minute. And by the end of the program, those students that were tested averaged 32 words per minute. which is 129% growth. You will see a large growth amongst the first graders. This is when the light bulb starts to go off. It's a crucial age for reading. And there's so much more room for growth from starting with a really low number to start to get it up. So the 129% growth, we were really impressed with. And we had at the end, 8 of those students, or 32% of them that attended, are now at grade level. For second grade, the average words per minute were 52. And by the end of the program, the average was 73 for 40% growth. And 10 students, or 37% of them, were now at grade level at the end of the program. So we were definitely really pleased with the growth in our building. We sent out a survey with the hopes of looking forward and potentially offering this again, getting some feedback from the parents and the teachers that were involved. And we had a couple of takeaways that are on the next slide here. One parent actually reached out. You can read them yourself, but I'll read one. One parent said, "I wanted to thank you so much for everything. She gained so much confidence and knowledge from reading Raiders, and I'm beyond grateful." And this particular parent actually put a post on social media when she received her daughter's scores. She was so pleased that she was at grade level, had made so much growth. They made a cake for her and celebrated at home. And that's the environment that we're trying to create with programs like this. So definitely moments like that are what makes it worth it, and getting the feedback from parents. So it's definitely something that we're looking to continue. And I'll let Mr. Huber share his successes at Phyllis Wheaton.
Hey, good evening, everybody. I'm the principal here at Phyllis Wheaton Elementary. And so we serve grades 3 through 5. And so for our after school program, what we did is we, like Dr. Long mentioned, and Mr. Sears, is we looked at our students who are, you know, considered bench sitters. They're right on that bubble. So they're like almost to grade level fluency. But because my building is also a testing building, I also took into consideration previous SBAC data with my students. And so I looked at their scores from previous years, and I really tried to hone in on those students who were at a level 2, but with a little extra push, could become that level 3 and be proficient. And so from the grade levels, you know, we looked at a total of 55 students. The breakdown is there that you can see 20 students in third grade, 20 students in fourth grade, and 15 students in fifth grade. We're a big building. We have approximately 650 kids, and in each grade level, it's just over 200. So when we look at our population of the kids that we pulled for this after school program, it's roughly about 10%. 10%, if you can make those kids move, that's a huge jump. That's kind of how we looked at the data and determined which students would be selected. Like with Mr. Sears, we also did 25 sessions, and our attendance rate over those 25 sessions was 85%. We did see a slight decrease towards the end because a lot of our kids are involved in after school programs, extracurriculars, baseball, basketball, all that good stuff. With our school, a piece of the data that we looked at, if you look at the next slide, is the words per minute for our students. And so, as you can see here, the average words per minute for our third grade students was at 84, which is a little bit under where they should be this time of year. However, at the end of the program, our average growth was 22%, ending with 103 words per minute. I'm sure most of you know, but at the end of third grade, students should be reading 100 words per minute. And then if you look at fourth grade, we saw a huge jump of an average of 70 words to 105, which was 50% growth. At the end of fourth grade, students should be reading about 115 words per minute. And then in fifth grade, our start was 103, and they grew to 120, which is 16%, my apologies. And the average growth for the average fifth grade student should be reading 130 words per minute at the end of the year. So we're really excited about this growth. And like Mr. Sears said, you know, we're hoping that we can start this program up, maybe sustain it a little bit longer than the 25 sessions. But it was, you know, our staff did a great job. I had 9 staff that ran the program, all in-house educators. They're, you know, teachers in the building as well. We didn't hire anybody outside. So I think that attributes to with the students feeling comfortable with the staff. Thank you.
And I do want to thank these two, you know, staying 3 nights a week for that time period, and our staff. I thank them for that, for their attention to this. And it's something that we're looking to grow next year for the success we see. If we can continue to see that, we'll continue to grow into our other buildings as well. So at this time, I'll take any questions.
Any questions for these gentlemen?
I ask a question. I just was wondering, given the data of the students that you used, that I think someone called them defense sitters, if you run the program, will those same kids be targeted, or will it be a different set of kids?
Yeah, it would be different based upon the data at the end of the year. And then traditionally what we're looking at is probably like October next year. You get that data at the beginning of the year to identify those kids again. We're hopeful. Right now we had to limit the number because of funding. So we're hopeful that we can open this back up to more students.
Yeah, I was just curious, excuse me, because some of the kids who made, I'm going to say, proficiency, right, and those ones who didn't, are they going to be considered in the program, for the program?
Yes, they will be considered.
Okay, thank you.
I've got a question.
Yes.
What will you need in order to sustain the program? Is it primarily a funding issue?
It is. It's Title money. It's Title I funding. So, continue to advocate and thank DOE for pushing for the federal side of things so that doesn't go away. But we are a high need school, and we use a lot of our funding is from grants. So this would be from grants funding wise.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Are you pushing this into the classroom too? It's an after school or evening program, but it is in the classroom.
Yes, it is in the classroom. And actually, you guys want to talk about the curriculum difference?
Yeah, so as a result of this program, we had a tier three instructional program called UFLY that we utilized in the classroom. We used it through the MTSS process for tier three students this year. And then we decided to use it as a part of this program. And as a result of that, we are going to be implementing some more UFLY throughout the school for interventions that are happening during the day, and look to continue to utilize it for this program at my building, is very phonics focused and really meets the needs of the kiddos that are struggling starting readers.
You're taking me so way back. I used to use reading fluency 2 decades ago. I've been reading fluency as a literacy specialist. I started with reading fluency being really, we're doing words per minute. There's so much more to reading than that. But for the record here, it is a great predictor. It's kind of like a blood pressure exam. Like when you go to the doctor, you get a blood pressure test. If your blood pressure is off, if the doctor just assigns you or prescribes you a blood pressure pill, they didn't figure out why it's on. So reading fluency is an indicator to other literacy issues. I keep seeing this data here, maybe look back at my cut points, because I built cut points, what level. You said you had to have 100 words per minute by third grade. That was what we knew. We knew by kindergarten, first, second, third grade, what cut point, what reading word per minute students need to achieve fall, spring, end of the year to predict proficiency of third grade. At the time, it was California Standards Test. Now it's the SBAC, but this has high predictive value. Have you done alignment to this, to the SBAC?
Good.
Yeah, so that is the plan. With the second graders involved, obviously they'll be going to third grade and they'll be taking the SBAC score. And then I'm sure.
Yeah. So when I mentioned about looking at SBAC data, when I compared those students' fluency scores to, you know, the students who had a level two, but just approaching level three, you could see that a lot of those students were just below that fluency benchmark for the respective grade level. Yes. And so there is a direct correlation. I would agree.
That's
with that.
Why it's so helpful.
Yes.
You're not waiting for the SBAC, which is an autopsy.
Right.
You know, they need to do something.
Right.
You can get the fluency score group to the place that's a predictive, then you're going to be the best. So kudos to you for figuring out how to get that alignment.
Okay. So we appreciate you guys here. There's a small gift in front of you on behalf of the Woodbridge School District. So thank you.
Thank you.
I'd also like to acknowledge that the Woodbridge School District's board president is here. I didn't catch your name.
Rita Havermail.
Is there anything you'd like to throw in with this this outstanding presentation? Putting you right on the spot.
Thank you. Welcome to the bridge. I know several of you when I've worked at DOE and a fellow State Teacher of the Year. And Ms. Stevens and I spent a lot of time together developing the Teacher Academy program of study. So it's great to see that blossom. But welcome to Woodbridge. We get sometimes small districts in Sussex County kind of get hit a lot with, you know, but this is a great place. We have exceptional administrators. I've put them up against anybody. And we have wonderful teachers. And as a board, we support them. And we're all about, you know, all about kids. So It's a great place to be. It is the place to be. And so thank you for joining us. We're happy to have you here. So it's good to see former colleagues and friends. So thank you.
Well, thank you. And we speak of Sussex County, that's where I'm from. Our schools are a heartbeat of our towns down here.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it is upstate, but down here, it's a fiddle rivalry. I mean, I hate to play Wood Ridge in football. But it's fun. But thank you for having us and a great presentation. And keep moving forward because Delaware will make our students number one. Okay, thank you. Dr. April McCray, Director of Assessment and Accountability at the DOE, is here to introduce the next presentation. Dr. McCray, we're going to do scoring update for, is it just WIDA or WIDA?
WIDA.
It's Assessment for Delaware English Language Learners.
Are you controlling the slides? All right, so thank you very much for your time this evening. I'd like to take a little bit of time to wait for the slides to come up. To share with you a little bit of context and reasoning behind the request that we have for you this evening around our request for an adjustment to the exit criteria for the WIDA alternate assessment. And so we can just go right ahead and dig in. So under ESSA, states are required to hold schools accountable for progress in English learning as well, both for the development of their English language vocabulary and proficiency, as well as mastery of their regular curriculum. So one of the assessments that we use for that is ACCESS for our regular education students. And for our students with significant cognitive disabilities, we use something called the ACCESS-ALT. And we do this through the WIDA consortium. And I hear that there's been some question about what is WIDA or WIDA. WIDA is a consortium similar to Smarter Balanced, only we use WIDA for the assessment for English language proficiency. WIDA was originally a collaboration between Wisconsin, Delaware, and Arkansas. So those were the three states that were the founding members of this consortium. And now there are 41 states that are members of this consortium. So it's one of the main main resources for English language proficiency across the country. So the exit criteria set for each of the English language proficiency assessments lets us know whether or not a student is eligible for English language support services and whether or not we can exit them from those services based on their proficiency level. Delaware has a set exit criteria for the regular access assessment that's set at 4.7. We are not asking to change that at all. The current criteria for access ALT is set at a PLA-3. Slide. Access ALT, however, has gone through a significant shift, changed completely. So the PLA-3 doesn't exist. And so we're asking you, the State Board, to approve a revision of the exit criteria from an A3 to a PL, to a PL3, which sounds like, okay, that sounds fine, but we are required to share with you what the reasoning behind all of that is and how a PL3 compares to an A3, as well as with some of our constituency across the state. So that's what I'm here to do tonight. So, just for clarity, the Access ALT is, again, I want to share with you, administered to the students in grades K through 12 who are identified as English language learners and who have the most significant cognitive difficulties. So these are special ed students with severe cognitive difficulties, not your general everyday special education resource students. And for our state, that's a small population. It's about 25 students annually. Students who meet that exit criteria are also exited from English language support services. So that's a really important thing to keep in mind as we go through next slide. The Access ALT redesign was put into place mainly because the original ALT wasn't necessarily doing the job of ensuring that students from that population were seeing meaningful, accessible, and relevant items for that population of students. So they redesigned it to ensure that the assessment was meaningful to those kids. And when they did that, we had to go through several processes that we'll talk about in the next couple of slides. Delaware students saw the new assessment in 23-24. Next slide. Whenever you have a new test, it has to go through something called standard setting, where trained educators from across the country, in our case, And we did have representatives from the state of Delaware come together, and they determined the new proficiency levels on the assessment. And that, of course, is why there's no longer an A3. There are other proficiency levels on this new test. Our teachers determine these new CUT scores, and that leads us to this evening. So to determine what the most appropriate exit criteria for Delaware would be based on these new CUT scores, what we did was we looked at the exit rate of the regular education student population on the regular assessment. Basically, how many students by percentage are exiting from EL services using the regular access test? So what's the percentage of students who exit annually from EL services? And then we wanted to compare that to the number of students who are generally exiting from our Access Alt assessment. So basically, is this an opportunity for us to level set? And we'll look at that in the next couple slides. Wait a minute. We also wanted to identify, and we worked with WEDA to do this, at what level are students proficient on the Access Alt assessment, but also able to be successful on their alternate content assessments? So that's really important as well. And then, of course, we also wanted to make sure that we were communicating with our constituency in the field, our MLL coordinators, our multi-language literacy leaders, as well as our ESSA community of practice leaders, which represents superintendents, teachers, Title I coordinators, all sorts of people. Well, I have a list of all of them, a slide coming up. Right. So the average exit rate for EL students without those severe cognitive difficulties on an annual basis is about 9.4%. So of an approximately, you know, over a 3-year period, the average has been about 16,000 to 17,000 students across our state who take the access assessment. And on average, about 10%, if rounding up, are exiting from EL services on an annual basis. Next slide. Using the A3 criteria, 52% of our students with the most significant cognitive difficulties were exiting, which means those students with severe cognitive difficulties no longer receiving English language supports based on their criteria that we had set previously. That's a significant difference. And so the opportunity was there for us to say, at what level on the new performance scale does this become more equitable to where our students with these significant cognitive difficulties would be exiting from these services in comparison to our regular education population? And that seems to be at a level P3, where approximately 17% of students would be exiting versus the 50% of students. So that's point one. Next. In asking the WEDA Consortium to look at students' performance on the ALT assessment, the WEDA ALT assessment, as well as their ALT content assessment, question being, when are they proficient with that ALT assessment as well as their content assessment? Next slide. It appears that at grades 3 to 5 for ELA, the level is between a P2 and a P3. For math, it's P3 and P4. And at middle school, it averages out at about a P3. At high school, there's not enough data across the country. Students are taking different assessments. And so the overall conclusion is for WEDA across the nation is that students who achieve an English language proficiency score of about a P3 or a P4 are more likely to engage successfully with instruction and content that allows them to be successful with their alternate content assessments. And so we've shared the same information with our MLL coordinators to find out whether or not they feel as though P3 is the appropriate level for students to be exited across the state. Also with our community of practice membership, which includes, I put a listing there of all of the different representatives who are on that committee, and requested their feedback. And their feedback was, that sounds good to us, mainly because a P4 limits the number down to a very small percentage of students exiting. They felt like that was too stringent. And anything lower made it so that it seemed like students were being exited before they were ready to no longer have those supports in place. And so I'm here today to ask that the State Board consider this request
for next month,
and approve our revision from an A3 to a PL3 as the exit criteria for the access fault assessment.
Great, thank you. Any questions?
I have a few.
Okay.
So I got in the weeds with trying to understand this a little bit. So let me just start out by understanding how often are these students assessed, whether it's access or access fault?
So they're given a screening assessment throughout the year. So they have multiple opportunities to assess. They give them the screener, and then after they're given the screener, then they take the access alt. Then they're given a length, a speaking assessment. They're given a writing assessment. They're given speaking, reading, writing, and then there's also, yeah.
And so how often are they given that? Like, do you have one chance to exit out? Or mm-hmm.
No, it's given throughout the year.
It's given
times, yeah.
Okay. And so once they exit out, then are they supported, or do you just move them into the general population and now they're done?
So these students are special education students anyway, so they continue to receive supports, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have so many. I'm like trying to wrap my head around this. So the other thing I kind of want to understand is this the only measure of exiting, or do you have other measures in place?
So this is the main measure for students in who received multilingual learner support through Title III.
Okay.
It doesn't mean that they're not receiving special education supports or any other supports or MTSS supports or any of the other supports that they'd be receiving for school.
Okay. One other thing that I would just say is when you refer to regular education student population, I am now wearing my hat as an Easter Seals board member, and we are trained to use terminology that's inclusive. And to me, regular education does not feel inclusive. So
I apologize.
Okay, thank you. So I would appreciate if we could use like general education. Okay. Just so we're on the same page. And I'm saying that as an advocate for.
I appreciate your advocacy, actually.
Yeah, thank you. One other question. You said that the average exit rate for EL students without the severe cognitive difficulties is 9.4.
Correct.
So that's the access fault.
That's the regular access assessment.
Right, I'm sorry. That's the regular access. So what's the exit rate for access fault?
The access fault on the old scale was 52%. So of approximately 25 students per year, 12 to 13 students were exiting,
okay,
which is a very high rate for students who. So if you consider the fact that these are students with severe cognitive difficulties,
yeah,
who also
yeah
come from a family or a background where they don't necessarily speak English as a primary language.
Yeah.
So this is a situation where I'm struggling in many ways, and I also may have difficulty understanding English, and I'm now exited from those English support services. So now I'm going to continue to have struggles, right? So by increasing the exit rate at this point, then what we're doing is allowing students to remain with those services longer.
Anybody else?
And yet still keeping it at a rate where they're able, you know, and that's why we ask, at what point are they also showing that they're able to be proficient,
right,
on their content assessments, you know, without sports? I mean, this is the way that we're doing this so that we can ensure that we're making it so that we're able to keep them in their support services as long as possible or as
yeah
long as they need to be, and still they're able to be successful.
All right, anybody else? Come back to
Anisha
if we need to.
I just have one more question that I think you need to see what I, like, when I went through that document that you sent mm-hmm us. So it looks like the redesign, this is the old exit criteria, right? You have A1, A2, A3, P1, P2, and now the new one is P1, P2, P3, P4, P5, and so the A3 and the P3
They're not identical.
Is it because the scoring has changed?
The scoring has changed.
Yep, all right, got it.
And we have concordance tables that I can share with you if you'd like to see them. They were it was extra complex, and I felt as though that might be just don't.
I think it was all in that document. Yeah, that's where I got all the. Yeah, I'm good. Thank you.
Anybody else? Questions? All right, well, thank you. We look forward to seeing you next month.
Absolutely.
Take care.
Next, charter school updates. For information, Leroy Travers, Director of Charter School Offices, here this evening to provide updates for the work in the charter school offices. Mr. Travers.
Good evening. Would you like me to come up?
Sure, why not?
I'm going to stand. Well, you have my report. Just a couple of good news announcements from our charter world. I would like to just add a couple of little things there. I know I highlighted Positive Outcomes, JDG team for their Governor Service Award. However, I would encourage you guys as a group to go onto the Governor Service Award website if you haven't done so already, and just take a look at all of the amazing things that are being done in service from our students in Delaware, charter, district, private, and homeschool students, because it is fascinating to see what's going on in our state in service from our young people. There's an adult section too. Check that out as well, but really take a look at what our kids are doing in our state. Outside of that, amazing news out of Early College High School. We have two high school graduates that are also receiving their associate's degree from Delaware State. A little personal connection there. Mr. Richardson, Christopher Richardson, is one of my former students when I was a school leader. I saw great things in him when he was just an elementary student. And now he's seeing his work and effort and his family support come to fruition. So outside of that, I am available for any questions you might have.
It was nice to see the early college students both receive associates in a high school diploma, Karen McCarthy and Christopher Richardson, I can say that.
That's likely impressive. Just the start for them. I mean, with the program that they have, you'll see those numbers go up and probably even go beyond that at some point.
I think so. Positive Outcomes, JDD students. Always like to see those volunteer reports. It takes a little bit of work to do that since they're already going to school. Most of them don't. It's not their cup of tea yet.
Right. That's why I really would encourage you to go take a look at the Governor's Service Award website. I was blown away at what students in the state are doing in service.
Well, any questions for Mr. Travers?
I got a chance to go to the graduation
festival.
I was the commencement speaker at their graduation. I got to lead these two very impressive students and a whole lot of other students, 60 college credits on graduation. It's really spectacular.
It's amazing.
It is. It's great. Great. Well, thank you, sir. Have a good evening. Next is regulations, Delaware Department of Education regulations for discussion or action. Tony Ed Borowski, Director of High Education Office, is here to review three regulations for action.
Good. I'm online. Can you hear me? Good evening. Juliet Mraski, Director of the Delaware Higher Education Office. I'm here with you tonight for three regulations, 1211 Career-Based Scholarship, 1216 Educator Support Scholarship, and 1217 the Mental Health Support Scholarship. All three of these I presented to you last month for action. There was no questions at the time. There was no comments. Those passed at the time. I'm back before you tonight for some technical corrections. So the Office of the Register of Regulations recommended technical corrections to all three of these regulations to correct the effective date of the regulations and to correctly number a section that references the effective date. Those are the only things before you tonight are technical corrections. Happy to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions? Now I'll entertain a motion regarding regulations 1211, 1216, and 1217.
Well, Javi has a move.
Well, Javi has made a motion.
To approve regulations 1211, 1216, and 1217.
Thank you. Well, Javi has made a motion. I need a second.
Stevens, second.
Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Thank you and have a good evening.
Thank you. You as well.
Next, Professional Standards Board regulations for discussion or action. Linnea Bradshaw, Executive Director of the Professional Standards Board, will present three regulations for information. Dr. Bradshaw, welcome.
Thank you. Whew, I got to unmute and turn my camera on just in time. The first regulation that I have is Regulation 1501, Salary Supplements for Educators. This is a regulation that we generally do every year or every other year. This regulation, the main amendments are in the definitions, and that is for the new induction program. And so we have new terminology. There's a few different parameters on the induction coaches, the lead induction coaches, and the induction coordinators. Does anybody have any questions after reading the regulation?
Any questions? All right, next one, please.
Regulations 1559 and 1582, those are simply changes that they're simply style changes. They're changes that we have done in all regulations. They are being done on the regular review cycle. Some of you may or may not know that the board has been under sunset review. And one of the recommendations that the JLOSC made was to take the PSB regulations off of a regular four-year review cycle and really only review as needed when corrections and updates are needed. And so these might be the last ones that come to you with no updates, just style changes. And so I'm very happy that I can get off the treadmill of just updating things that don't need to be updated. And so if there's not any questions, we can go on to the next.
Any questions? Okay, Regulation 1582, school nurse, it is for information.
It's the same thing for school nurse. It is just a regulation that has been done in four years ago, and it was time for a style update. And so there are no technical correction. Are there nothing but style changes in that one?
Okay. Any questions? All right. Thank you. We're going to move to next on the agenda. This is for discussion, Regulation 1596, draft title Charter School Instructional Administrator, State Board of Education. Thanks to the Professional Standard Board and Executive Director, Dr. Linnea Bradshaw, for their work on Regulation 1596. At the April 10th meeting, the SBE, State Board of Education, approved a letter to the PSB with information to aid the PSB and associated stakeholders in editing this regulation. I directed Mrs. Smith to convene a meeting of the associated stakeholders to collaborate on a path forward, and the meeting was held on April 28th. I'd like to thank board members Meredith Crippen and Jim Simmons for participating. Ms. Smith, would you please start a discussion on this item?
Surely. I was grateful to be able to get all of those people on the same meeting at the same time, and along with our board members, we had Dr. Bradshaw, and we had Dr. Saylor, and we had Secretary Martin, and we had Kendall Messett, and Casey Montney from the PSB, and also their vice chair, David Cohan. And so we just basically spent most of the conversation at the beginning talking about the four points that the board had put in the letter. And they said, number one, done, easy, name change. We'd like it to be called as a draft title, the Charter School Instructional Administrator. So the PSP agreed to that. There was some confusion around that as a difference from head of school. And then the second and third points in the letter regarding the ARTC program, which would be developed after the regulation is approved. We talked about that, and then we agreed that the request number four was for a later time. There were additional clarifications and clarifying language that were shared with that stakeholder group, and then I ultimately shared with the rest of the board members there and had positive feedback about that as well. So if Dr. Griffin or Mr. Simmons, if you want to chime in and talk about anything else from the meeting, please do, or what your impressions were.
Well, I guess I'll begin. I'm grateful to have been included in Ms. Smith, I think that you did a good job in the overall tone of what was happening. As I heard the discussion that happened that day, the Professional Standards Board was grateful for the input of the State Board when we sent the letter. And as Ms. Smith said, we kind of went through the four major points in the letter. I think what I came away with overall was that the PSB was still looking to ensure that the work that they would go back to do, because they kind of gave the hint that, listen, we've looked at it, we've rewritten it, and we've gone back and looked at it again. So they were really looking to us as a state board for what were the major issues that were going on with the document before it came back to us. I am grateful following that for the work that has been done. And I know that there is something that's going to go to the PSB and then come back to us. Just having looked at that, I think that it addresses much of, I hope anyway, at least for this board member, it does, much of what may have been an issue with prior iterations of this document. But overall, I believe that the meeting was positive and everyone recognizes the importance of getting this done. And I think that Dr. Saylor was able to address some of the confusion that may be around, and Dr. Bradshaw as well, the confusion that may be around why the ARTC program being put together follows what comes from the state board's approval of 1596, but also that there should not be, and I thought that this was really important coming out of the discussion, there should not be any concern that whatever the ARTC program will ultimately look like, that it would not be aligned to current standards, and that that language is actually in 1596 as it's currently written. So it would just take an interested party going to the appropriate place in either the Delaware Code or the Administrative Code to see exactly what the standards are that that ARTC program or the programs that may be established following the approval of 1596 are going to look like. So I thought it was overall, I talked way too long. I thought it was overall a good meeting. I'm going back on mute now.
Thank you.
I just would add to piggyback off of both Kathleen and Meredith's statements, that there was a brief discussion around the list of the experiences, but because it wasn't put into the letter formally, that we kind of tabled that, and to say that if that is in fact an issue, that needs to be presented from this board to the PSB versus making some assumptions. Like, what I remember also is that Dr. Griffin and I oftentimes had to say, speaking on my own behalf versus speaking on behalf. So I think it was important that that point got emphasized as well.
Dr. Saylor, anything you'd like to add?
As he tries to hit the unmute button.
His first time.
Sign language.
Look. He looks like he's at the ATM punching his pin in.
There we go. My apologies. I couldn't find that unmute button on my device. So, no, I think that you summarized it well. I can, if you're interested, I can walk through some of those same points that I made in that meeting with the full board, if you'd like to hear a little bit more about what are the requirements of an ARTC program for leaderships, you know, what does the approval process look like? How are those programs then reviewed and monitored? And if there are issues with the program, what does probation look like for programs. I am prepared to share any of that information if the board feels like there's interest in hearing a little bit more.
I would love to hear that, please.
Sure. So all ARTC leadership programs, as well as programs for teachers, are overseen and they are reviewed by the Educator Excellence Work Group, which is the work group that I lead. The regulation is Regulation 291 for ARTC programs. And what we're called to do is ensure that all programs align with state standards. And in this case, those would be the Professional Standards for Educational Leaders, which the state board approved as the school leader standards in Delaware. And those were approved in 2016. We were actually the first state to adopt those standards. The requirements for a leader ARTC program within that regulation would be that they have to have a minimum of 18 graduate level credits or their equivalent. So none of our leadership ARTC programs are credit bearing. So what we do is we look at the syllabus and we gauge how much time does each course take based on the syllabus, and then we will attach the equivalent of graduate credits to it. The other requirement for those programs is 240 hours of clinical experience, which we think is the most important part of a program, is that they're spending time alongside an experienced leader, getting experience through an internship. Something that's unique to our ARTC programs for leadership is that then once they are placed in a leadership role, the ARTC program is required to provide 20 hours of leadership coaching after the candidate becomes employed. So if they finish the program in the spring, they're employed in the fall, the expectation for that program would be that they would provide 20 hours of additional training. We also require all of our ALT programs to go through the DTGSS or the Delaware Teacher Growth and Support System credentialing. That's a 3 to 4 day training as well. We also require them to go through the specialist credentialing, which is an additional 1 day credit. And in this case, we've also talked about requiring the Studying Skillful Teaching course, which is the equivalent of a 3 graduate credit course that aligns to our evaluation system. And that course comes out of Research for Better Teaching. It's based on a book that is the Studying Skillful Teaching book, which is in its 7th edition. It's been around for quite some time. It's a really important course, we believe, for instructional leadership. And it was something that, as we started to talk about this program for charter school leaders, is a conversation that Kendall and I had about being a good addition to the program. And then the other piece of it in the regulation is that there has to be participant evaluations as well as an effective assessments built into it so that we can ensure that graduates from the program are meeting those standards. So in this case, the Professional Standards for Educational Leaders, in many cases, programs will choose the Praxis, but there are other options if a program would decide that maybe the Praxis isn't the best fit. So those are the requirements. They also, a program before they even submit an application would meet with folks on my team and we would go through the entire application with them. At that point, then they're going to have to begin working on the syllabi, content alignment to those standards, defining what the outcomes are, as well as completing a needs assessment to see, is this really a program that we need? And within their application, they have to submit who's going to be teaching in the program. So we need all the faculty credentials, as well as the instructional materials that they'll be using in the program, and a clear articulation to the PCEL standards. At that point, a review team at DOE goes through as content experts and will give them feedback on what they've submitted. I will say that since I've been there, I've never seen any program not get some feedback and some revisions that are needed. At that point, then a program receives provisional approval, and that is for 1 year. And sometimes within that provisional approval period, there may be some additional requirements that we may have. For example, in one recent program for teachers, we thought that they needed to do a little, some more work within the next year around science of reading because we had some new courses coming out and we wanted the faculty to participate in it. So we included that within the provisional approval. At that point, once a program is approved, then every 2 years, and this is a new piece in this regulation for leadership programs, we collect data annually and publish reports every 2 years. And those reports then are based on some very specific criteria that are also within this, that are within the regulation. So we're looking at things like their admissions, their clinical placements, completion rates of the program. Are there candidates being employed? What do their evaluations look like? What's the retention data? We survey all the candidates. We survey all the clinical instructors as well to know how are their placements going? Do they seem prepared for the for their placements? And then those reports are published publicly. So this was our first year of doing those reports. They'll be public then in 2 years, and every 2 years that report gets refreshed. If a program is not scoring at a tier three or tier four, it's a four-tier rubric, then they have a two-year improvement window. And within that, on that public-facing report, it is very clear what their tier is and if they are in probation. If after 2 years they don't leave probation, then the department can revoke that program and can shut that program down. So the alternative routes programs, I don't want you to think that it's a shortcut in any way. We do hold high standards. It's just an alternative route for folks. It's still rigorous. It's still data monitored by data very closely. It has clinical experiences built in, coaching, and all of the content has to be state approved. If changes want to be made to the program, then they have to do a modification. So I know that's a lot of information, but that was the information that I shared in that small group. For that group that met that day, seemed happy to know that there are a lot of checks and balances in place.
And if I could just add that for anybody, and I did this following that meeting, who would want to see that, it is online in the Delaware Administrative Code, Title 14, and then it's 291. Everything that he just said is written right there. The entire process and everything he talked about for school leaders. And the other thing that I got out of the meeting that I think is important, because the question came up several times in our discussions about this, is that any ARTC is also going to be aligned to the standards coming out of the PSB for Delaware administrators, and that's 1590. And again, there you can see everything that these are going to have to be aligned to.
Thank you. Emma Masson, hear your thoughts. Always anxious to hear.
Good evening, Anna Masson, Executive Director of the Delaware Charter Schools Network. I did want to mention, thanks to Leroy Travers, he was in that meeting too. And
thank you.
I was in a lot of sun today, so my brain was not working. So I'm sorry I missed that one. We appreciate the group being brought together to move forward with this language. And bringing all the stakeholders together and thinking through the needs and concerns of all of the groups that were on that call. So we appreciate that. We look forward to this process moving forward. That's all good. Thank you.
You know, there's nothing about us without us, right?
Amen.
Thank you. Linnea, do you have anything before we move on?
I do not. I would just say that at the end of the meeting, there was still sort of a question about Section 4.1.3. And so I did work with Dr. Saylor to just kind of rearrange that section to make it a little just a little more organized and clarify to make sure that there would be no misinterpretation going forward. The background qualifications, that language, we've heard from Ms. Massett that language was acceptable to her group. And it has also, it's acceptable to the other groups as well. And so I'm really hoping that this will get done with all due speed. My intention is to bring this to the June 10th meeting of the PSB, and then for it to be published in July and come back to both bodies in August.
Thank you for everybody who participated in the work that was put into this, because we do need to get this in place. It's an important piece to our education standard. But thank everybody. Public comment on regulations. Time has been set aside at this point in the agenda for the first of two opportunities for public comment, which is public comment on regulations. Ms. Smith, do we have anybody sign up for public comment on regulations?
Thank you for that.
We do not have anyone signed up.
Thank you. Committee and meeting reports, state board business. There is an opportunity for members to provide information and written reports made available on e-board on any events or committee meetings attended since that meeting. Anybody have anything they'd like to share further?
Sure, I'll go. I did a lot since our last meeting, but I'll share some of my highlights. So I was invited to participate with NASB conference planning. I think that they know how much I enjoyed it last year and really brought a lot back from that. And so Kevin Ellison, who is going to be the new president, invited me to join their conference planning meeting. So I did that. And, you know, we talked about what's important, what are we going to do for this meeting coming up in October, I think it is. The other thing that I did was I went to Polytech High School after our meeting there. I toured with Mr. Fisher, who I think brought about a change in culture at Polytech, and it was not easy, he said, but he did it. And these kids at Polytech are so respectful. And I think there's an obvious respect and admiration for Mr. Fisher. I mean, it was very obvious from just standing in the hallway, the way that they approached him and talked to him and engaged him on their own volition. It wasn't like he had to reach out to them. I asked him a couple of questions. I said, what's one thing that you're most proud of at Polytech? And he said he is most proud of teaching kids to be kind to one another. You know, I was there for probably half the day. He did invite me to come back on Monday to college day, and I think I am going to go. It's when kids reveal or students reveal, you know, where they're going to college. Another thing that I did that was equally exciting was I gave remarks and presented awardees with certificates and just with certificates at the PAEMST. They call it PAEMST. Help me out here. What does it stand for?
Presidential Award for Mathematics and Science Shared Excellence.
That was really amazing. I mean, when I tell you that this is a big deal, it is a big deal. So the six finalists got to stand up and give presentations. They were probably, I don't know, 5 or 10 minutes each. The first one was amazing, and then the second one was equally amazing. And the third, I mean, they had me, you know, just from the beginning to the end, all six awardees. It was very obvious that the theme amongst all six educators there was that they really loved their profession. So that was very exciting. I have a bunch of other things, but those were kind of the things that really stood out for me. That's all I have.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Deb, anything?
Yeah.
You're nice, Sage. I'm going to get to you.
I had an opportunity this week to attend the first town hall for the Reading Consortium, where they established the meeting to get feedback from the community around three questions that they had formulated. The first question being, what did people believe made a great school or a great school district? The second question being, what programs or resources does the community feel needed to be part of the school? And then the third question took a look at some of the what they were calling their big ideas. And they wanted to know whether people would support, for example, universal pre-K. Would they support supplemental pay for teachers working in high-need schools? And would they support magnet schools at the elementary school level? You know, some really thoughtful questions, but Jim was also there, so Jim chimed in. The sad thing was there were probably only six community people there. The rest of the audience, which was probably, what, another 8 or 10, were current people involved in policy or were part of the Reading Consortium. And so I don't think they got the full benefit of hearing from the community. And so they're doing another meeting next Monday evening, and it's going to be on Zoom. And then they're doing, I think, a third meeting Thursday of that week. And so for any of you that know people up in Newcastle County, specifically with schools in Wilmington, to encourage the community to please, you know, dial in and give their opinions and answer to these questions, I think the Reading Group would really benefit from the input coming in from the community. You know, I don't know whether it was the time. This week it was held at 5:30, and I know if you're a parent, you're probably home making dinner for your children. You know, maybe if they had offered childcare. I mean, they ordered tons of, I mean, just boxes upon boxes of pizza and other food items, but there was no one there really to enjoy that. So, again, if you can encourage people to attend the next two meetings, that would be great.
I'll just piggyback while that was on that topic. I did have a chance to speak with Senator Lochman after the meeting to just talk about, like, what can we do differently? Like, you know, if you're not aware, I was the guy who got all the eggs thrown at him when we were trying to get WLC up and running and attended or hosted over 300 meetings. And we started to see the same thing. It's the same people. Like, we even started to joke to say, like, this person has perfect attendance at every town hall, right? And so... So we talked about doing some things differently. She's hoping that the virtual will help so that folks don't have to come out. She also talked about, bounced off some ideas like going around with flyers and giving people a chance to just provide written feedback and not having to sit and listen again. I think that was very humble in saying that there were six. I don't know that there were six. At one point, I looked, everybody in the room I've seen at a Reading meeting before with the exception of one or two. So it's just... I believe it's Reverend Powell's statement, like, we've got to find a way to get the trusted messenger. You know, I think the folks who host it are all well-known in their circles. Like, I also reference Representative Chipolta, who is probably the boots-on-the-ground guy of all our legislators. But do all of our people see Nnamdi as a trusted messenger? And I don't know. And so how are we using trusted messengers? How are we going to football coaches? Are we going to churches? Are we going to daycares? Because those trusted messengers will get the audience to say, let's sit up and listen. So I just wanted to add that.
Can I just ask a question?
If I can jump on that as well, to hear that, Ms. Stevens, what you're saying is both disappointing and unfortunate. As the state board representative on the community engagement subcommittee, I know that at our first and second meeting, or at the first meeting, when the discussion came up about this very thing and how do we talk to the community, how do we get out there? I know I was one of many people who talked about the fact that we can't just buy food, open up an auditorium and expect people to come. And there were myriad ideas about how to engage the broader community, to the point that Mr. Simmons just made, by going into places like houses of worship, barbershops, or wherever, but going to where the people are and using the means of communication where they are now getting their information. We talked about infographics and surveys that may be somewhere online that they can actually get to the people, but continuing to believe that folk are going to come out for a couple of slices of Papa John's. I don't know what kind of pizza it was. Is going to be sufficient. I think that we are time and again being shown that that's not enough. I mean, Zoom became a thing during the pandemic, and I can speak as a sitting board member then, depending on what you were talking about, you would blow Zoom up and not have enough space. And now we see that even for Zoom meetings, attendance is not what we might anticipate that it's going to be. So to the point that Mr. Simmons made, unless and until we really begin, and I'm saying we really begin to say we have to go where they are, we're always going to find ourselves with the same 8 to 10 people who care about it, or it's their job to care about it, in these rooms. My rant is over.
Thank you.
I was going to kind of say the same thing as Meredith, but I was wondering, has engagement always been on the low end?
I'm overlapping Reading and WLC because there is a lot of overlap.
Yeah.
I think when we were doing WLC, it was this new thing that was like, what is going on? Let me find out. And people want to get, we're waiting for boards to vote. So boards were encouraging their community members to come out. I think with Reading, unfortunately, and maybe even unfairly, they're going, we've been through WEAC, now we've been through Reading. And like, so three iterations saying something similar and yet no recommendations. So I think that it has, worn out its welcome. And so we've got to find a way to repackage it. Because again, I believe that what they're doing is very needed and very necessary, and it's very good work. But at the end of the day, I think folks are waiting for a decision, because once there's a decision slash recommendation, there's a ton of questions that we know, and there's a ton of questions or unintended things that are going to happen that we need to address, right? One of which is, this issue doesn't talk about high school. There's a number of kids in all of those 9 WLC schools in this case that are going to high school next year. And right now they're going to get on a bus, but there's maybe a decision that changes that, right? And so I think that it's gotten to the place where, give me something, then I can talk about it. But again, I don't want to speak for the people either, but I think I'm closer to the ground because I see students, former students, and a lot, and they're like, no, Mr. Simmons, what is this thing? What are they talking about? And why are you in front of it? And I'm like, well, so I get a chance to talk to them at their level, and so that's what I hate. Like, until something happens, we've been here before, we're just calling it something different. And it's unfortunate for Senator Lochman and Matt Dead, who are the two co-chairs, because I think they are doing some good work, and it's been a different approach. With WEAC and WEAC around trying to provide those wraparound services. Because just giving schools to a different district isn't going to fix proficiency in schools, right? And so I think they're trying to address it the right way. However, make a decision and then do those things, and I think people will come to talk about what's the impact of our decision. Just one man's thoughts.
That man must want my job because he's preaching. He really is. And I concur with what he said. And he only went back to WEAC and WEAC, but we know that the work of those two groups built on work that had been done 15 and 20 years before even then them. So I do believe that there is some fatigue in the community about continuing to talk about it and not pulling the trigger on something. I think that once the plan is finalized, once it comes to the state board, once the state board makes its decision, I then do believe that when you start talking about removing districts from the city, and they know it's going to happen, and children are going to be in one district or another, or watch this. Teachers who are now in one district are now worried about what's it going to look like when they have to level my salary up or whatever it is going. I think then you won't have to worry about these rooms being filled. These rooms will be filled, to Mr. Simmons' point. And I don't even know why I'm saying all I'm saying about this. We're not the Reading Commission. we're the state board. When it comes to us, we'll have this discussion, I'm sure. But I think then that's where all of the questions and all of the community engagement is going to come from. I do trust their work, and I understand that they want, this is also a community, and I'm talking about the city of Wilmington, that for, and this is somebody who grew up in Wilmington, I know that what they're trying to do is be cautious to not be yet another group that is doing it to the community without the community's input. So they are taking a belt and suspenders, you know, measure twice, cut once kind of approach. But I think at some point they're going to, and I think they're getting there, they're going to recognize that let's just do what we said we're going to do, and then we can tweak it on the other side.
Yeah.
Just that Nisha, Sage, and I were at Woodbridge High School this afternoon. We had an opportunity to meet with some of the students there to hear what they thought about the school and give suggestions for change. And I think I will turn it over to Sage. You can encapsulate what we heard today.
Yeah, of course. Thank you. Just following up on that, it was a great experience today to see we met about 15 leaders and sophomores from Woodbridge.
Freshmen,
sophomores, and juniors from Woodbridge High School today, and then we asked them a series of questions, you know, ranging from AI in the classroom to mental health, to how they thought that their school experience could be improved. And, you know, it was wonderful seeing the lack of motivation in these kids. You know, they're determined to kind of fix the problems that they feel are prevalent in their school. So we compiled that data, we're going to use it for the better, in addition to other schools that we've already conducted more of that. So I'm excited to see where that work leads us. And then I also had the privilege of attending the I-4 Public Education Funding Commission meeting of the year, and I was able to continue learning about the distribution of funding in Delaware as compared to other states about education. And then lastly, I attended an ASBE roundtable where I conferred with other students, other student members of state boards of education across the country. And we're continuing to work on different proposals to send to NASB headquarters regarding different aspects of education, specifically like early literacy, mathematics, proficiency at a young age. And then that's about it. And I'll be writing a report for a board eventually.
You haven't done that yet?
I know who holds the record on that. You'll never break it. Well, glad you had a good forum. And then go to another funding meeting. I'm sure you saw that overnight. I guarantee it's entertainment. Keep you up for that. But thank you for doing that today. Appreciate it. I have one thing. Other than a few things that are listed, but Secretary of Education Scholar Dinner last month, Secretary Mark, you tell you, some of these students, I just amazed. I didn't know what to say. They're just outstanding leaders of leaders of leaders, is what they're going to be. But a great time, good dinner, and a great conversation with some of the students, and just a look at their higher leads. It's off the chart. It's sort of reminds me of myself. Back a couple years ago. That's all I have. Anybody? Reverend Powell or
President? One thing that I failed to mention. They had a NASB principal collaboration, and I was asked to be on that committee. I'm not sure by whom. Somebody sold them my resume, I believe, for my principal. But there was some confusion. So more to be determined, because there was a email that went out that said the meeting started at 4 and an invite with a link at 4. But then another email that said it started at 3. So people were coming in and out, and the nasty folks apologized above and beyond previously. But the time that I was there, of course, I get on 15 minutes early because 15 minutes early means you're on time, and finds out I'm 45 minutes late. I think from the little bit that we did talk about it, I think it is a great opportunity for us as board members across the country to talk about the common issues we're seeing around principalship and leadership, to be able to address those things, maybe learn from each other, hopefully learn from each other, and move forward. So I know that that meeting will be rescheduled, and so more to come.
Thank you. Anybody else? All right, then. Well, thank everybody for what they did this month, other committee and meeting reports. Executive Director Fort Liz Smith.
Thank you. You have my written report, and I wanted to highlight a couple extra things. Be on the lookout tomorrow for the weekly roundup. I will put that link that Mr. Travers mentioned to the Governor's Service Awards so that you can easily access that. I'll also attach Regulation 291 and 1590 to the email as well, just for some weekend reading if you'd like. And I did include some extra items in your folder, and I have included a copy, an electronic copy of the draft meeting schedule for next year. The board traditionally approves that in the June meeting, as well as a couple of preliminary budgetary items that have a July 1 start date. So I did put a little summary in the back of your folder about where the budget stands as of May 5th and what we're going to carry over, hopefully. I also added some items specifically for strategic planning next week, and that included the Vision Coalition 2035 plan, and I also included the sort of results in different iterations of your SurveyMonkey that you did as pre-work, and I appreciate that. I know it's hard to narrow down when I said, here, take these 10 and pick 4, and I know you wanted to actually do all 10, but that your input will help us narrow that focus in developing goals and action steps. I also included some statistics of how the implementation of all of the early literacy legislation is going. I just included it with your materials, but we can certainly go through that in a little bit more detail next week. And I also... So, but more information forthcoming about the May 22nd meeting, which is at the Cabinet Room, Council Building, next week, and I'm looking forward to that as well.
Student board member, did that close 12?
Yes, it closed Monday. We received 32 applications, and so the governor's office, boards and commissions, is compiling those, and we'll share those out. And I thank Dr. LaHavia and Stevens for volunteering to help screen the applications and narrow down about a dozen to interview. And then we'll hold the interviews. Then the rest of the process is we get 3 names to present to the governor, and that the boards and commissions team does that. And then governor appoints, and hopefully we have the student at the July meeting.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Smith? Okay, thank you. Legislative update. During legislative session, we have this item on our agenda to give board members an opportunity to ask questions for a rate discussion about education-related bills. Information is posted on eBoard. If there are any questions or comments from board members, please send those in an email to Ms. Smith. Yes, if anybody has a question, there is a list of a few in here. Send that to Ms. Smith so we get you an answer. Secretary's report. Secretary Moore.
Hi, everybody. You have my written report, so I'll just give you some highlights. Last week was National Teacher Appreciation Week, which, of course, we love, but it's also Educator Support Professionals Week, which is recognized the Educator Support Professionals today in the University House. But we recognized teachers last week. The governor welcomed all the teachers of the year from each district to Woodburn
spread the name of the residents. That was wonderful for the teachers to hear from our teacher governor and sort of his stories about being a teacher and be able to share some stories with all of the great teachers that are being recognized. And we also have coming up in June behavioral health professionals will also be recognized. And I just love the way Delaware does this to recognize at the state, not to have the legislators and the elected officials recognize them. I don't think it should be a week, I think it should be every day. But there's a time that we step back and we recognize the teachers and all of the people that support our students. And we, speaking of recognizing, the governor gave the governor's award, governor's team excellence award, and a team from the department that got the award for having Delaware having was the only state to grow its educator workforce post-pandemic in 2023. I happen to know about that quite well because when I was deputy secretary of the U.S. Department of Ed, we recognized Delaware for doing that. And this morning we spoke at a Pathways event that brings six different great Pathways programs that we have to find ways for people to get into the profession. And for me, recognizing Delaware when I was at the U.S. Department of Ed for having addressed this problem in the best way possible and having the most growth, that was recognizing what Delaware did. Now that I'm here, I'm recognizing how they actually did it through the registered apprenticeships, through the Grow Your Own programs, through the teacher academies, through the ARTCs. I'm trying to remember the six that I called out today. I call out six different ways how they're doing it because I'm a how kind of person. I don't like to just talk about the what and the why. I talk about how. I don't like to just admire the problem. How did Delaware get recognized by my own former department? Now I know. Because I've been here long enough to see these pathways, and it's phenomenal. And then the fact that the governor also recognized that very same team that made that happen is so. Been spending time going to multiple pathways events. We had signing day where teachers are signing that they're going to go into the teaching profession. We held that down at the old state house with Michael Leshaner. The team is just best in class. I'm very impressed by what they're doing. So the governor recognizing that team is just more facing on the cake, so to speak. I also attended the Healthy Food for Healthy Kids event. I love this garden program. It's my personal love because I built a school garden when I was a principal and then figured out ways to build more school gardens in San Diego where you can grow food all year long here. It's a different way of doing it, but this program, I met some principals and I got to go to a garden build where they were building Silver Lake, I think it's called elementary, where they're building a garden tying into science curriculum and science. It's an incredible program. I also visited, I wanted to learn more about the Reading Assist program here in Delaware, being a former, you're never a former reading specialist, but in my life's work, I wanted to see how Reading Assist was working. So I visited a charter school. What was the name of it?
Academia Antonio Alonso.
That was the name of the school. And Lewis. Was that where we went to Lewis?
Yes.
In Wilmington to see it in action. So I was very impressed with that. So I'm digging into that a little bit more today and what they're doing. And then I also joined the Literacy Alliance online meeting the other day because I found my people. I don't think that the literacy emergency the governor and I have declared is addressed only through science reading and improved instruction in the classroom, which of course is number one. And in future meetings, I'll talk about how we're doing that. It's an all at Delaware approach. And I think it's our libraries, it's our small businesses, it's read aloud programs, it's pediatricians, it's across the network in Delaware. Get Delaware Reading and address literacy. And so joining the Literacy Alliance, this is a group that's been up to it for a long time. So I was glad I could join them. I've also got to know the Delta Group, and I forgot what it stands for. It's Delaware Education Learning. It's for English learners. Do you know what Delta stands for, Jim?
I don't remember. I might have it written down.
It's an incredible network of teachers that volunteer a membership way. They belong to this group where they support English learners across the state, and they are phenomenal, and I attended their scholarship awards where they talk about impressive students, hearing students that have overcome incredible challenges and have done the world by learning and going on to do great things. I was so impressed with the scholarships and the stories that they told that I said I need to write them each other. So those are some of the things I've been up to. My report says the rest of it. So
thank you. Any questions? All right, well, we'll move on then. Next on the agenda, formal public comment. Time has been set aside at this point in the agenda for public comment. Ms. Smith, has anybody signed up?
Yes, we have Kendall Massett from the Delaware Charter Schools Network.
Kendall.
Good evening. Kendall Massett, Executive Director for Delaware Charter Schools Network. I have a couple of things, and I know I'm between you and getting home, so I'll go as quick as I possibly can. As a follow-up to what Mr. Travers talked about for our positive outcomes, our amazing positive outcomes students, I did also want to shout out the leader of positive outcomes, who last night in Atlanta received a national award, the Champion for Student Success, from the A-Game group. We're very, very proud of him. He is also the board chair for the Delaware Charter Schools Network. And as I keep saying, and I'm saying this wrong, he's the longest, living is not the right word, he's the longest in the charter community of anybody in the charter community. He's been in charters for 29 years. Last week, we celebrated our community at our IDEA Awards, Innovation, Dedication, Education, Admiration. We will be sending the information to Ms. Smith about all of our winners so that you have that. We also announced that night our Charter Teacher of the Year. Katie Moreau is a first grade teacher. She's been teaching at Newark Charter School for 17 years. And y'all have got to go see what she does. And we'll try and figure out if you can go when she does mud bowling, because I can't wait. And we're very excited about her representing all of the charter teachers at the Delaware Charter Teacher, at the Delaware Teacher of the Year program. Today, you see, I'm dressed a little bit more casual. Today, we had close to 300 students from multiple charter schools at our annual charter rally in front of Legislative Hall. And one of our students, Vaishnavi Sakti, we lovingly call her V, she is a member of our Student Advisory Council. And she went into the Senate and the House with me today to speak on behalf of charter schools because it's National Charter Schools Week. And so she was amazing and got standing ovations in both houses, and not just because she's a student, but because she stood and spoke off the cuff and had an incredible story to tell in both the House and the Senate. And finally, 30 years ago, this legislative session, Senate Substitute 1 for Senate Bill 200 was passed in Legislative Hall and then signed by then Governor Carper to make sure that charter schools could exist. And so this is our, and this is my announcement, I told Leroy I was going to make a big announcement, this is our year of 30. And so for the next year, we will be celebrating in big and small ways, having 30 different events over the next year. And it started today, our rally, and then going into Legislative Hall for the National Charter School Resolution was our first event. And we hope to have all of you at one or many of them. And they will culminate in a gala in the fall of 1996 to commemorate our first two charter schools. Positive Outcomes opened on a Tuesday in September of 1996. And Charter School Bloomington opened very next day on a Wednesday in September 1996, opened with 247 students. And as you all know, today we have 19,032 students. But we will be celebrating. Expect an invitation in the mail when we figure out all the details. Thank you so very much for giving me extra time. And safe trip home for those of us that live a little bit farther than down the street.
Feel bad. Feel bad, but thank you. Great presentation there. We look forward to hearing from you over there. Just a couple of things before we move on. We will be collaborating at our May 22nd strategic planning meeting. That is next Thursday. It'll be at 5:00. Look forward to impacting student outcomes and getting Delaware closer to being number one. Remember, Ricky Bobby, if you ain't first, you're last. That's a great one, but anyway. Anyway, I want to take time to thank the Woodbridge School District. Thank you for having us. We appreciate your time and being here and your presentation. Like I said, keep moving forward. Education in Delaware is important to every student, every teacher, anybody who's associated with it. But again, thank you for having us. Okay, with that, I will entertain a motion to adjourn tonight's meeting. Oh, excuse me, Meredith. It is casual next Thursday.
No, I was going to ask the question.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Nisha.
I make a motion to adjourn the meeting.
Second, Simmons.
Okay.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
It is 6:37 p.m. and the meeting is adjourned. Thank you, folks. Safe travels. Hey, Marco, how are you? I meant to say something, but you're too climbing there.